The Live Exchange Conference is your chance to find out what's happening in the livestock export industry with a program that features thought-provoking and informative speakers. Open to all members of the supply chain, you can network with around 400 delegates from across the country, with several social events and a variety of trade exhibits. Live Exchange is being held on the 9th and 10th of November 2022. Visit liveexchange.com.au to get your tickets. Listening to the Central Station podcast, where we bring you true stories of what life in the outback is really like and why many wouldn't live anywhere else. So pull up a stump, pop the billy on, or crack a cold one as we talk to the men and women who call some of the most remote parts of Australia home. This podcast is brought to you by Ariat Australia, the perfect choice for the tough jobs. Ariat boots and clothing work hard, look good, and are so comfortable there's never a need to slow down. Visit ariat.com.au today.
Golden guitar winning Tom Curtin and his incredible wife and business partner Annabelle were our guests on the very first episode of this podcast, way back in June 2019. Way back when I had never recorded a podcast and didn't know what sound quality was. So last night, I sat down with Tom and Annabelle for take two. And it actually was last night that we recorded this because I am currently recording this introduction at 12:26 a.m. Northern Territory time. Dedication. I know. Just kidding. Anyway, my plan was to re-record our first episode in better sound quality, and that's it. But plans changed. So in this episode, you'll hear some condensed versions of stories that were covered in episode one, including Tom's childhood, how Tom and Annabelle met, and the Catherine Outback Experience origin story. There's also a few new stories from those times, and then we catch up on what's been happening since Tom and Annabelle have last appeared on the show, including the birth of two children, a number of national tours, and the new album, which is released in a couple of weeks. And let's not forget COVID. Sometimes you can't connect the dots looking forward. You can only do that while looking back. And looking back on this episode and the experiences that Tom and Annabelle have had, it's clear that these two have given everything in their path a good crack. And when times have been tough, their resilience and sense of adventure shines through. Tom and Annabelle, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So it was just over 3 years ago that we sat in this house and recorded the very first episode of the Central Station podcast. Times have changed a little bit.
Just a little bit. There's a few more of us now. And, we've been through some pretty wild times here.
Some things never change, though. We're still recording at nighttime because that's the only time that you guys have got to do anything. You guys are sacrificing sleep for our listeners, but the setup's a little bit better now. Hopefully people hear us.
Yeah, it's very impressive. I must say, I'm eyeing it off. I think we might have to invest in one, Tom.
It is good. We just have to have time to use it, I suppose.
Yeah, I have heard whispers. Oh, I feel like years ago you mentioned the Tom Curtin podcast and I've been waiting for it to come out, but
if only I had some time. Hey, Tom?
That's right. We were thinking about that, weren't we?
Yeah.
We do meet a lot of great, interesting people on the road, and we did have an idea of traveling around and recording these guys. And a lot of the times we try to video record them in stories because I just think it's amazing to hear all these stories and more people should be hearing them. And that's how the idea came about. But yeah, we've got to really try to, just not sure if we've got enough time to do all that stuff, have we?
Maybe I should just hide in the horse truck when you go on tour next and I'll just come along with you and do it.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be the first time, would it, Steph?
Actually, no. Since the last podcast, I have come on tour with you. Oh, kind of call it coming on tour.
Somewhere in there you came on tour.
I went to like 3 shows. I helped out.
You did. Down in Southern WA.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, he has so many people on tour, he doesn't even remember me. Ouch. Anyway.
I'm sure I remember
he's
vaguely.
He's just too famous now. He's just gotten too famous, no, too big, no, doesn't remember no, us little fish. Oh, anyway, the first episode we recorded on this podcast is our most listened to by far. I think it's up to something. It's over 30,000 downloads, like possibly closer to 40 now. It's been a while since I've checked. We have hit 1 million downloads since I last saw you guys.
Well done.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank
good
you.
Good work, mate.
And I cannot listen to that episode we recorded, not for anything you guys have done, but I know you remember we sat at your kitchen table and we had this one little microphone in between all three of us. I was not wearing earphones. I didn't know what it sounded like until I got home and listened on the computer. And by then I was back in Broome, 2,000 k's away, and there was no chance to re-record. So I thought we'd take the opportunity now at the flash gear to cover off on episode 1 again, some of that story, and then incorporate a bit of an update. So why don't we just jump into it? Because you poor people need some sleep at some stage.
We have children. We don't sleep. There's no such thing.
Cool. All right. We'll go all night then. Tom, so I think we started the last episode with a bit of your story.
Yeah, so I sort of basically grew up around Kingaroy, between Kingaroy and Dalby on Mum and Dad's farm there. I've got 4 other brothers and grew up, on a peanut farm and beef cattle. I had a fair few Angus cattle growing up and had a swag of horses. They weren't really well bred. They were pretty touchy and flighty, but we sort of was always mucking around with them outside and a few dogs. We had a lot of fun, really, training a few dogs. We had no idea, but thankfully down the track we hung out with a few fellas and around the school age or high school, and they sort of taught us a few basics. But I'd always wanted to get up to the Northern Territory. I'd seen it on TV and the wide open spaces, so I'd always wanted to get up here. And, Mum and Dad always said, no, you've got to go to school or boarding school and get a trade before you go. So I sort of locked into that contract for a while, and I did try a few swift manoeuvres to try to get out of it. But
did you just call school a contract?
Well, this kind of a bit of a contract, isn't it? That you got to see through. So anyway, I did all that. I went to boarding school in Brisbane. Somehow managed to win a music scholarship to get there. My older brother won an academic one, and Mum and Dad didn't have much money, so he got in that way. The pressure was on me then to succeed in this academic field. But, I sort of didn't quite have it all going that day when the test came out. So, sort of failed miserably. But I did the music test and somehow managed to pass that. So they gave me a scholarship there to Marsh Brothers Ashgrove. And we did a lot of piano lessons at that stage and had to play the trumpet and trombone and things. But after that, I still wanted to head north. Mum and Dad said, no, you've got to go to uni or a trade. So I went to Gatton College, did a 3-year degree in beef cattle, genetics, nutrition. I did love it, love uni life. We lived at Forest Hill, just outside of Gatton or outside of the campus as well. So we had a lot of mates there growing up and played a lot of footy and things, and it was awesome. But, on weekends we had to pick a lot of watermelons or tomatoes, a lot of chemicals, and I got a lot of headache because I had to earn money to pay rent and things like that. So it's full on, and then I did a fair bit of contract horse breaking just on school holidays or uni holidays at home, and that helped a bit, and covering costs and trying to buy a car and things. But eventually, headed up to Mount Sanford Station, which is about 900K, I'd say, south of Darwin, with Paul and Jane Stone were managing. And we had a lot of characters again on the station and went straight into the stock camp, mustering cattle. And, we were in a swag most nights, and I began to write a lot of songs on the back of a horse each day. And these songs would come into my head. An old bloke gave me an old guitar. He wasn't that old at the time. It was Martin Oakes, actually. But he was older than me, so we'll pay him out there. But he's a great bloke, and he helped me, gave me an old guitar, showed me three chords. Every lunchtime I'd go practice for an hour or so. And then I got moved into the station with him, breaking in horses for a while, and he was instrumental in helping me get going and helping to write the first couple of songs, Smack Bang and the Windmill Song, which was amazing. So, yeah, he really gave me a kick along there and got me on the right track. And, yeah, I did a lot of – I was there for a few years and then went out contract horse breaking for about 10 years full on, and in between somehow managed to win a singing contest up in Darwin. I think I was the only one in it, to be honest, but got down to Tamworth, met this fella called Garth Porter out of that band Sherbet back in the 70s. And, yeah, he just really helped me get along, wrote a lot of songs together. We've written – I think we just finished the fifth album. I'm still with Garth, so it's just amazing to combine the music, you know, with the horses. We, after a while, got moved in, and one of my brothers, got four other brothers, so one of them lives next door to me here in Catherine. And at the time, I asked if I'd give him a few lemonades for rent, and he could actually, I could set up portable yards on his place and try to get all the cattle stations to send the horses in to get trained in the middle of his mangoes. He had a little bit of a room there. And, so it was pretty hot, pretty touch and go. And then we'd get up pretty early in the mornings, you know, 3:30, have the generator going. And there's an old fella next door that lived next to Pat. And he came over one morning about 7. And I thought he was going to rip into me about the noise from a generator. But he said, mate, why don't you buy my place? Because, you know, I'm about to sell it and it'd be all set up. It's nothing on the block, bare block. You could set it up how you wanted. And I said, look, I'd love to, mate, but I just don't have any money. He said, look, well, I can see you're a hard worker. What if I give you vendor's terms and have a crack at this place? And I couldn't believe it. So I said, right, I'll go to the bank. And so, yeah, he was amazing. And, you know, he was an ex-local copper from up here, Bob Bruce, and we bought his place, he moved on, and tremendous bloke. And, yeah, he gave me a start here, and we started training out of here. It's going really well till that 2011 live beef export ban hit and all the budgets were cut on the cattle stations. And so I had no horses. I used to do about 150 horses a year and got sent in here, and overnight all the budgets were cut, so had to rethink stuff. So I went singing at the caravan park 4 nights a week in town, and those people said, hey, can we come and see what you're doing each day training horses and dogs? So we started off still trying to train a couple here and there, horses. We started this Outback show, yeah, probably about 9 years ago, I think, underneath a tree out the back here. No one turned up to the first show, which felt pretty good. And then, I was honestly doing about 3 shows a week, but only 1 or 2 people would come, often no one. And, yeah, my mates would drive around and rub it in and pay me out and say, listen, what are you doing? You got rocks in your head. No one's going to turn up here. But, I think I just threw my heart and soul into doing a show for those 1 or 2 people because I thought they would go away either bagging me out or speaking positively. And, it just started to grow from there. So
it's been almost 10 years.
Yeah, that's pretty scary.
How time flies. And you can't half tell that you've told that story a few times before.
Yeah, a few times here and there. But
when are we going to get the Tom Curtin book?
I don't know. The life's only just starting.
Doesn't that happen when you die?
No, there's people that put out memoirs now when they're like 24. So
true. Right. Prince Harry's about to, isn't he?
Oh, really? See, it's just your first book, chapter one. And I feel like you've told the story so many times, you'd be able to write it pretty easy. It could be a little wet season project. Write it while you're on tour.
On tour.
Just add another thing in. I don't know if anyone's ever floated the idea of a book to you, but I think this could be one, guys. There's so much.
Can you stop now, please? We have far too much going on for that.
There's so much, I guess, yeah, if people want, I guess, the less condensed version, they can go back to episode one. But there was just so much going on in a relatively short period of time for you then. So I guess for people who haven't heard episode one, so you kind of had your parents made you go to school. Well, obviously, that's legally, you're supposed to. And then to uni.
And so as soon as you finished uni, you decided to head out on a cattle station instead of going and getting a job that probably more so required that degree. And how did you balance? Were you still interested? You'd been at school on a music scholarship. Were you still interested in music at that stage? Or was it once you got to uni, you just kind of had your sights set on coming up north and it was all about
chaos?
Yeah,
I think I just had I saw it at uni. I didn't do much music at all. I'd never written a song at all until I got to the Northern Territory in the stock camp. First song was Smack Bang because I just felt I was in the middle of the territory, Smack Bang in the middle. So I began to write up that on the back of a horse. But I think while I was at uni, Heytesbury Beef came to the uni and gave a talk about Mount Sanford Station and there. And that I think they had like 400 horses at the time and they had a lot to break in and they were divvied up amongst all the other cattle stations that Heytesbury owned. And that really caught my eye because I always wanted to be a bit of a horse trainer. And mum and dad always said, look, there's no money in horses. Just get out of that, get your head right and, you know, get your degree. And so, yeah, I suppose I remember Paul Stone saying, you know, after the first year, would you be interested in coming in and training horses next year with Martin and things like that? So it all sort of went from there, but
So after 1 year of working on the station, they invited you back just to work on the horses.
Yeah.
So you're obviously half handy. Where did all that – I mean, that sounds really sassy saying it now because I know you're very handy, but as a young fella, where did you pick up those skills along the way?
I'm not that handy, but there's some tremendous horse people and men and women out here, and it's mind-blowing how they're going these days. But
he's very humble.
No, honestly, that's how I feel. And I do love training horses, and I do love getting up because we're sort of tired here a lot. A lot of the time, I'm up early, and I YouTube a lot of stuff on videos, and so I might be having a coffee at 3:34 in the morning for like an hour. I might have a couple of coffees because I love it, but I love trying to keep learning. So as a kid, I think I was about 10-year-old. I went on my school holidays to Hurley Toomey's place at Kingaroy, about half an hour down the road, for 3 weeks. I took my own horse, who was pretty wild. And yeah, I took a book and I wrote down everything that Mr. Toomey said. And, you know, he was very old school. He'd bag the horse down and pull it around. He'd have spider hobbles on all feet and things like that. But that's the way they did it back then, you know. So I sort of started to learn all this, his method. And, you know, but he was amazing. I can't remember the first episode. I don't want to go over stuff, but he was absolutely amazing. Like he was about 85 and he had, you know, he'd just whistle and this horse would just come running out of a paddock up to him, and he had this yellow dog in this old chook pen, and he had tin all the way around the chook pen, right? So you couldn't see in, and I was always, you know, leaving Smoko early and trying to peep through a little hole in the tin to have a look at the dog, and he caught me a few times, said, "Oi, mate, don't go near the dog." And eventually I always pestered him, can you show me something this dog does? And then right at the end, he said, "Okay, Tom, I'll show you this dog." And he had 6 head of cattle down the paddock, and 3 of them had ear tags, and he said 3 don't. So what I'll do is I'll send this dog down there, and he'll bring the ones back with the ear tags, and he'll leave the ones with the no ear tags in the paddock. And I said, okay. So off we did, and this dog went down the paddock about 800 meters in a bit of scrub country, brought 3 cow heifers back with ear tags, because he said to the dog before he sent it, "Here you go, mate. I want you to go down the back, get the one with the ear tags." And he grabbed hold of his ear, of his own ear, and started wriggling the earlobe and said, "Ear tags." Dog went down and brought 3 back with ear tags. And then I said, "Yeah, but how do I know the other 3? They've probably got ear tags as well, mate." And he said, "No, okay." So he let those cattle go. They ran back down there, waited about 10 minutes, and he said to the dog, "Hey, mate, I want you to go down there and get the ones with no ear tags." And he folded his arms like a cross in front of his chest and said, "No ear tags." And so the dog went down there and I could see it. We sat on the top rail. I was sifting through the cattle and brought these three back and had no ear tags in their ears. And I said, mate, how the heck did you do that? And he said, mate, if you hang around long enough with horses and dogs, you'll work it out.
I've been hanging around with them for a long time and I can't do that.
But there's a lot of stories like that.
Wow.
That he just showed me on, you know, every second day, was little things. And I just, you know, it was just amazing to see how his mind worked, how his training worked, and the people he hung out with. It was just phenomenal. So that inspired me a lot. And then I also hung out another bloke down the road called Gary Barber. He was right into building goosenecks and horse trailers. He was a real bushman. He could do a lot of stuff, fencing, and very, very handy bloke. And then we're also sort of a stone's throw from Rick and Alice Greenup.
Oh, yep.
Yeah. So, and they were great people. And so Rick showed me a lot with working dogs and also leather work. On a Sunday, I'd shoot over there and he'd show me stuff like that. And we went with a few other people in the area mustering cattle, and I was helping out a lot when I was home on holidays. So they sort of inspired me a lot. And also, you know, Mum and Dad, they were instrumental. Like, Dad wasn't a horse trainer, but he still knew the basics of horses. And, you know, we'd wash horses, and every second Sunday, you know, there'd be Dad and five boys, single file, trotting into 12K into camp draft, sorry, into the pony club, because we didn't have a horse truck, ride all day, then trot home again. And, you know, he was unreal at doing that. He could have just said, oh, no, it's too far, we're not doing that. But it was just amazing. We did a lot of riding, a lot of mustering, and, yeah, and there's a lot of tough horses too that we're trying to, you know, work out and get the best of. And so I think there's still hunger in me to try to, you know, now with the show, with the Liberty and the horse, you know, we say horse starting these days under saddle, and it's more working the mind of the horse over than physically trying to use brute strength. But it's the same with a pack of dogs as well. So the alpha leader, and there's a lot of, you know, constant research I'm doing to try to better my skills and deliver a better product and train our staff of what we're after, you know, as the end product.
So it's like animals and music is always kind of coexisting in your life. Like, you, as a kid, you kind of started with the horses and dogs, and then you got that music scholarship, but then you go to uni and that's probably stunning livestock again, not much going on musically then, but then you come out to horses and then music pops up again. Like, it's always kind of playing tag, it sounds like.
Yeah, well, I suppose it's always there. Like, whenever I'm riding a horse down the road, I'm always, you know, for some reason, I'm singing a song or humming a tune. And, yeah, and, like, even making the albums and things like that, it's not really to say, hey, look at me, you know. It's more that when I was in the stock camp, I'd be singing or writing the songs. There wasn't much going on, you know. We're working our guts out every day, come around at night, there's no phone or TV. So these fellas, hey, Tom, what song did you write today? And so then it really put a bit of pressure on me to start writing. And now, and even today, like, I write a song and I go, okay, now would this song connect to those fellas around the campfire that night, or would this just be too wishy-washy and they wouldn't really understand and connect with it? And so it always takes me back to that. And, you know, I think, yeah, the horses' hooves are the drum beats, or every horse you get on, usually in the canter, has a different feel depending on how the conformation is. They've got a long neck and a short back, they're pretty smooth. If they've got a short neck and a bit of a long back, they take smaller strides, and the beat's more of a swing feel, you know. So there's a few songs in there on my early albums that, you know, yeah, a bit of a swing feel. And it came from riding a bit of a rough horse on a day that, you know, that created a melody, which then created the song. So, yeah, I think these days we do a lot of shows. I still love it. And even to recharge myself, you'd find me down there training dogs or horses, you know, just by myself. And I find that, you know, that's my way of recharging my batteries.
So were you out in stations for a few years breaking in horses before you came back into town to set up and do the same thing?
Yeah, so I went, I think I started about 2003 when I went out initially, And yeah, went to Newcastle Waters. We traveled all over. So there was Newcastle Waters and then out to Ian Rush out on the Barkly there, Anthony Lagoon Station. We did a lot down to Bunda, Riverin, and Invoy. We came back up to Canfield, Monogini, we still did a fair bit of VRD, Mullaloo, all around the traps. And then, and they had a lot of horses all year. So I was just going, you know, often I'd sometimes still bought a place down at Kingaroy. And then I'd come up for 2 weeks, do a mob of horses, and then fly back and just try to build that up a bit. And other times I was up here for 6 weeks at a time and fly back for 2 weeks. So, yeah, it's something in my system got caught up here in the territory and the way of life and horses, and very lucky too to, you know, be still living, to be honest, because at the time it was really just cutting my teeth into the horses. I've done a few, a couple of weekend horse schools, and they're more about training, like rollbacks and things, but I hadn't really done too much with, you know, rank, because when I started, I was doing 6-7 year old horses pretty much untouched, you know, and they would chase you out of the yard. So you had to think everything in your power. I remember I was on one cattle station and I had to, because I was just starting out, see, I had to, the good horse breakers were getting the younger horses, and the ones that people didn't want were the ones I had to do. So I remember I was on a horse and I was hitting him with a whip to get him to go. I was 60K from the homestead and, yeah, he just would not travel out. And then I was just trying to work out what the heck was going to happen here. How could I persuade this horse to take one step forward? And then a dingo came along and came just trotting along the track. And then I sat really still and to see how close this dingo would get. And it came right up to the horse, and the horse just put his head down and started following the dingo. And so I thought, well, if I move, it'll put my attention back onto me and it'll stop. So I just sat there. And then the horse started just trotting after this dingo. Then after a while, we started just loping along out in the middle of nowhere. But it just freed that horse up, and then it taught me a lesson about, you know, you can't physically get this horse to go, but next time why don't you put another horse in the yard, you know, that this horse may follow to get going and things like that. So it was a lot of trial and error, a lot of luck out there as well. You know, have been thrown off into trees and fences and flipped over on, and, you know, it's a lot of stories, but I'm still just very grateful that I got the opportunity to do all that, you know, and be still smiling here today.
Was it always the plan when you left uni to be breaking horses full time? Like, I know you've went out in a stock camp first to work with cattle, but then you kind of got the opportunity for, but was that always kind of the end goal, just to be a horse trainer?
Well, always, yeah. I think, I sort of really wanted to be a horse trainer, and I was always training horses. They gave us 4 horses in the stock camp that you'd rotate through, and then grab another 4 second round. So I was always training them, you know. We did a few camp drafts and things with the station, which was awesome. But I was always interested in horses and how they worked and how to get a better turn or a stop or a spin or to chase a cow. And, yeah, I've been always pretty accused of being pretty observant. So I'm always looking, even at camp drafts, I'm analyzing people's feet and hands and how they get that horse to do this or that, or I just love it. And I suppose it's because I've always been basically by myself. And even when, you know, working with young horses, and you've got to be really tuned into their ears and the color in their eye and any wrinkles above the nostril and how they're carrying their head and their tail, because they're all giving you signs of how much pressure you can put on each horse and their personality and get away with it. And I'm still learning, and it's only because I've been absolutely smashed by them, but I've got an utmost respect. And so it's, in the show these days, we're here in Catherine, we use different horses at different levels for a 20-minute segment, 25-minute segment, starting young horses under saddle and You know, we're explaining, okay, this horse feels like it's going to do this or that, and you can read the body posture of the people in the crowd as well. You get some horsey people will come, you know, with arms folded, and I can read the body posture from where I'm standing in the arena. But then they're always at the end. They can see, look, we're not just using the same old donkey every day. We're using horses that can really kick and bite and, you know, buck the saddle. I've been bucked off heaps of times in the show. So I love it representing the raw version of, you know, what's really out there.
You mentioned just before that the first, just because you've just brought up COVID, I know that's kind of, I guess, the second major hiccup in the story so far, but the first one was the live export ban. So can you just give our listeners a rundown about what, I guess, how that affected you back then? And then we're going to get into my favorite part of the story, which is how you and Annabelle met.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, at that stage, or just before that, so I ended up buying Bobby Bruce's house here and 20 acres, about 5-6K out of Catherine. And we're training a lot of horses here, just in portable panels down the back, bit of sand arena. That's all we could afford. And, yeah, and it was going pretty well. Like we had a lot of horses backed up, ready to break in and get going. And then overnight, the budgets were all cut. And I remember still getting the phone call from, Newcastle Waters saying, you know, sorry, mate, those other 80 horses, we can't do that now. So it's pretty mind blowing. I went a bit numb, to be honest, but same thing. I'm going, man, so we got that. We got these mortgage repayments. How are we going to, get cracking, you know? And, yeah, so I then had to just try to, you know, focus a little bit about, local horse people, possibly that didn't rely so much on live trade or anything like that, that I could possibly get a couple of horses in to train. And then I said, well, I went around to the caravan parks and said, hey, any chance I could sing here? And, yeah, the Big Four caravan park at the time there, they were amazing. So I had a bistro and I'd just go in there 3 or 4 nights a week and, sing and 3 hours. And that was really good, you know, because I was still pretty timid. I am still pretty timid, I reckon, but, it was really good practice, you know, because I didn't really have time during the day to practice. I'd practice at the caravan park about my strumming, singing, tapping my foot in time. You know, I bought a little stomp box, which sounded like a drum. And so I'd have it there, but I didn't turn it on because I'd be all out of whack. So I just tap my foot and then, you know, I'd be mainly practicing and delivering. I remember, John Williamson told me, the singer, he said, Tom, the biggest thing, you got to have good songs, but the other big thing you've got to do is the banter in between songs. You know, you got to keep the crowd there and you can't talk too long, but you've also got to be interesting. And so I said, righto. So I just started talking about what I do, horses, the dogs, how the song came about. And then people in the crowd would come up in between sets and, hey, where do you live? What do you do, mate? And they became interested. And then they said, oh, can we come out and have a look? So a lot of people would come out and have a look during the day. And I'd be just showing them around. This is what I do. Can we have a look at this? And then it sort of, they sort of said, oh, mate, you should actually charge people. Come out, just give a demo. And so, yeah, it began sort of like that. And so, yeah, we sort of rolled with it for a while. And, but it was still tough going. Like, I put a lot of pressure on my first marriage. I was married back then, 2 kids. The live beef export ban hit, and then put a lot of pressure on my marriage. And, yeah, we ended up splitting up, and they all moved down to Perth, and I was here and stayed here. And, again, that was, you know, very daunting. You know, because and these days a lot of, you know, a lot of fathers, I suppose, that have just split up or often message me or contact me, and man, I'd be speaking to a couple a week, I reckon.
Really?
Yeah, and they know sort of the backstory, mainly from probably your podcast or a few other things, because I don't really talk about it too often, and a lot of people that are split up with their kids away and, you know, I was going, man, I could probably just move down to Perth and drive a truck or work in Woolies. I wouldn't care as long as I could see my kids. And I got really thinking about it, you know, just get rid of this place, go down to somewhere closer to my kids and things like that. And then, I don't know, this gut feeling in me was just saying, you got to make sure that when your kids see you, that you're still happy and you're still full of life, you know? And I just thought if I was down there that, you know, it wouldn't be 100% Tom. It'd be, I can do it because I'm doing it and it'd be a big sacrifice and I could do it, no worries. But I reckon the kids could see through it. And I thought, man, what if I just stay here? I love training horses. I love, you know, being in the top end. I love writing music. And what if when they came back up, they could see what I was doing? They could see I'd tell them my dream. And I did. I told them that this is what I want to do. I want to start this Outback show. And I remember telling them that I think Charlie was 3, Matilda was 5. And it was absolutely devastating for me and also them. But kids are very resilient as well, you know. And over the years I've been to a few counsellors and things like this and researching and I told them that, you know, I'm going to plant trees here. I'm not going to plant any trees over there because one day I'm going to have an indoor arena. And again, a lot of mates said, oh, as if you're going to do that, mate. But I just had a vision. I put it on my board up here in the house. And at that time I wasn't even in the house. I had to rent my house out and I was living in a 4x4 room in the shed. And, you know, but that was fine by me because I knew that everything was helping out, working towards something. And so, yeah, I think, when those kids came back, they could see this is my goals. I'd write them out. This is where I'm headed. This is what I want to do. This is what I want to save up. So I want to get you guys a pony each and things like that so that when they came here, they could see the vision I'm going and they love it, you know, and now, they're 12 and 14 and they still love coming. They still come up here and dad, I can't believe you got that indoor arena. You know, I can't believe you're doing this. I can't believe, you know, that song kind of sounds all right, Dad, you know? So I'm really a big believer in sharing your vision, you know, or the way ahead that you see it to your close mates. You know, you don't have to broadcast it, but I just think that, if you just keep thinking positively, I really believe that, you know, things happen for a reason. And you've just got to grab those opportunities and run with it because, you know, I'd rather say, well, I grabbed that opportunity and, yeah, it didn't really work out than, oh, I should have got that opportunity when I had it because look where we could have been, you know. And so, I don't know, at the time it was devastating. I'd cry a lot in the round yard every day. I was working 20 horses up pretty early and I took on more horses just to keep my mind active so I wouldn't be thinking about negative thoughts. And I think, again, the horses saved me because I'd be galloping or cantering them down the road, doing big miles on them, and it's just like going for a run or exercising. So if you keep that exercise up, it's really good for your health and your mind as well, and I think that horse work really helped me out mentally.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I know you definitely didn't say that in episode one, and I think that's really special. Like you said, there's people out there that message you about this. I would have thought you'd be getting messages about my dog's doing this, my horse is doing this. Hey, I want to release a CD or, you know, can I come be like your support act on tour? And I'm guessing you do get all those sorts of messages, but there'll be someone out listening to that part just there that's going to connect with. And obviously it already does because of the people that are messaging you. So. It's generous of you to give, like, to share that side of things and to, if people are messaging you, to respond to them, like, yeah.
Yeah, we get a lot of everything, horses, dogs, and, you know, and a lot of country people, you know. We sort of, you know, represent Dolly's dream as well. We meet a lot of people on the road that have lost kids to suicide as well, you know, from bullying, but also other issues. And so even writing the song Speak Up and then thinking, oh, I might help out a few. And then you go along and at the end of the show, these pretty powerful, isn't it? Like these parents come up to you in tears and they're just thanking you for, you know, so it's, and I'm going, man, I wasn't really aware of how effective a song could be or what we're doing. And again, we don't have to do it. We could just sit here and just chill out over the wet season. But I just found out that we've influenced or affected a lot of people on the road, a lot of families. We go to a lot of towns where, you know, they miss out on a lot of entertainment as well. And so we're going, man, why don't we go there? Why don't we put a smile on these poor fellows' faces and so they can forget about life for a while, or, you know, they've been affected by floods or suicides, or we often go to towns with a lot of suicides in the region that we find out about, and it's off the grid. We go, heck, we don't care. Let's just go there, because people will come 4 or 5 hours, sometimes 8 hours. They've come to see shows that we've done out there, and I go, bugger it, let's just do it, and you know, and put on the best show ever for these people, because it really connects and they'll really be grateful for it.
It's incredible how Catherine Outback Experience has evolved from, you know, starting as you just trying to get a meal ticket after the Live Export Band, just kind of keep yourself afloat. And then it's, you know, it kind of started off, and it's primarily, you know, it's an entertainment experience, but this whole other layer to it now, where you say, like, you're writing songs that are touching on, like, there's lots of fun songs and some really funny ones, like the frog one. What's that one called?
Billy Don't Like No Hip Hop.
Yeah, everyone, go and listen to that one on Spotify. It's great. Based on a true story, I believe. But now you've got songs and you're involved in other, you know, things going on that really, it's a whole other level that you really don't, that, yeah, like you said, you don't have to be doing, but how special is that?
But I think the special part is meeting Belzy, and honestly, without her paddling this boat the same way as me, sure, she might roll her eyes a lot, but
I smile a lot as well.
She's amazing. Honestly, it's like someone just said, hey, here's a little fairy for you. And she's an absolute angel and works her heart out. And, yeah, if I didn't have her, it wouldn't be a team or a partnership and there wouldn't be any Catherine Outback. So every day I'm sort of pinching myself that she's still there rolling her eyes, because I love it.
Well, I think it's probably about time we hear from Belzy then, Annabelle, which is, I think you're still in my phone as Annabelle McClarty, but you are Annabelle. You've been Annabelle Curtin for quite a while now.
If I'm honest, I've never actually legally changed my name because I didn't have enough time. It wasn't a high priority.
That is so on brand for you, not having enough time.
Story of my life.
I'd also like to take this opportunity just to let everyone know that while you might be married to Tom, you've known me for a lot longer. So
I have.
I win that one, just saying. Anyway.
Go for it.
Anyway, yeah, tell us about how you met Tom and the role, I guess, your dad played. Good old Lee.
Oh, this story is better coming from Tom, I would have thought, but sure. So I, at this point in time, I was living and working in Perth. I grew up an hour south of Perth in Western Australia on a beef cattle farm called Blythewood, just on the outskirts of a town called Pinjarra. And I was born into a sixth generation beef farming family, and we have a really amazing history, actually, which is really cool, really something I'm really proud of. And we were some of the first, well, I say we, way before my time, but my family.
We'll take the credit.
Someone's got to fly the flag, right? My family were some of the first pastoralists into the Kimberley region in the north of Western Australia, but back in the 1880s, and they took up a bunch of pastoral leases, including Jubilee Downs, Liveringa, one of the more famous stations, I guess, in the Kimberley, Umaguma, Kaleida, Lilligai, and I'm sure there's a couple more in there that I've forgotten and missed, all around sort of Derby, Fitzroy Crossing and Broome. So they had a really long history up there, and a really early history up there. They sold out in the 1980s. before I was born. But I'm still going to fly that flag and have continued farming to this day, still in the Pinjarra region. So it's pretty special, and we're up to 7 generations now because we've all gone on, had babies and things. But my family's still farming there, which is pretty special. And on this particular day back in, what was it, 2015, my dad picked a hitchhiker up off the side of the road and brought him home, which is just mad because my dad is the biggest de-risker in the world. Anyone who knows my dad, Lee McClarty, will know that he's a great fella. He's great, but he's a serious de-risker. If he wasn't a farmer, he should have been in OHS for sure.
Yeah.
He would have nailed it. And anyway, I've arrived home. I was pulling a sickie. The next day, it was a long weekend. It was the Main Up Camp Draft, which is a fabulous camp draft in the southwest of Western Australia. And I'd planned to pull a sickie. So I headed home this particular Thursday night, an hour south of Perth, rolled on in my corporate gear, walked into the kitchen, and there at the end of the table is this cowboy in a black hat. And I remember looking at Mum and Dad going, who's he? And I'd had a really, really, really funny day, and I had a few bottles of wine. I was like, oh, I've just got to debrief on this day that I've had. It was ridiculous, and I won't go into it now. But it was funny. He had a black hat, and my dad had always been onto us about never, never, ever trusting someone in a black hat. So straight away, the alarm bells were like, whoa, 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 whoa. Why is there a guy in a black hat here? He was also really big on never, you know, be interested in camp drafters. So I'd always sort of avoided that because, you know, dads are usually right. But and at that point in time it wasn't anything. And Tom was heading to this camp draft. We were heading to this camp draft. It was sort of right for Dad to offer him a lift down the next day. So there we go, headed off to this draft, sitting across the front seat of the truck, Dad, myself in the middle, Tom, and a good 3-4 hour drive. And we sort of got to know him, and turned out he was kind of funny. But just a really nice bloke, and came down and helped us out for the weekend. And it was sort of a mutual, you know, he got a lift and we gave him a swag, and, he helped us out building some yards, filling up waters and things. And we just became friends, and it was lovely. Didn't think anything of it. You know, he was a little bit older than me.
Such a grandpa. Jeez. Cradle snatcher, Tom.
Cradle snatcher. But we just became friends. Honestly, we were both, yeah, different places, I suppose. He was in Katherine. I was in Perth. I was living that sort of corporate life, and my life was sort of around going out and dresses and high heels and kicking off the night in beautiful bars and usually finishing the nightclub. And yeah, Tom was up here, but we just I don't know, we just got along, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, sort of such along. A delay.
No, it was. I think the whole thing was that she grew up on the farm, you know, and I think, yeah, she's got all the high class, high rolling lingo, but
used to.
Yeah, she's gone a bit ocker now.
Now that I'm a Territorian.
A bit rough around the edges. Yeah, she's still very grounded, very witty, very funny, and still very sexy. So,
oh, stuff it, Tom.
Yeah. Guys, blush. Ew.
Yeah.
Ew.
We have children now. We can't talk like that anymore.
I'm just in the room in general. Ew. No, continue on. Yeah.
Anyway, so a year went by. He convinced me to move to the Territory. So I threw in my corporate life, everything I'd sort of worked towards, and thought, what the heck? If it doesn't work out, it doesn't matter. The worst thing I could possibly do is always wonder what if. What if I'd gone and given this whole Katherine thing a go? So I'd never seen Katherine. I'd never been here. People had painted a colourful image for me of what I would be moving into. Tom had failed to mention he was living in the 4x4 in the shed. He told me about his house. In fact, there was a couple of houses on the property. He told me about the houses, but he forgot to mention the bit about we would be living in the one room in the shed that would double as our office by day. But
minor details.
It's a faint memory. So many years later, it is a very faint memory. But yeah, slowly we moved up in the world. We after 6 months we moved into the granny flat, and I had to really push that one with him.
Yeah, I was still content in the little room in the shed, but yep. She wanted to move up.
And then a few years later, we moved into the big house. So not that it's about that at all. And to be honest, we're so flat out that we don't know. When I say big house,
compared to the 4x4
meter room in the shed that doubled as the office by day. But no, so it was a pretty big adventure, and I moved up here. We were pretty fortunate. A big part in that is that we won a major contract with the Gantt Train. And if that hadn't happened, honestly, it would have been a whole different ballgame. I don't think I would have been able to justify moving up and working with Catherine Outback Experience at the time, but I knew when we won that contract that Tom couldn't do it on his own, and I guess that was almost my license to go, righto, let's give this a go. And funnily enough, I actually stayed working for the company I was working for in Perth, sort of externally, which was a big thing for that day. It's no longer now that COVID's happened. But and they would ring me every week for about 10 weeks, being like, so can you take on any work? I'm like, no, I'm sorry. We're just so busy. We've got so much on. Try me next week. Try me the week after. And they gave up after a while, and I think I was crossed off the books. But they were an amazing company to work for. That was so cool. But yeah, that was 2016, and from there we've just
– Was it that long ago?
I know, and it's funny – chatting, like listening to Tom chat about this story before, I'm like, gee whiz, we've covered some ground since then, that it really is just, it's like an old memory almost. And the business has just grown and grown and grown. And every year I sort of think, well, we'll get these processes in place and we'll get this sorted out, and next year will be a bit easier.
And next minute it's the, what is today? The 3rd of October.
In 2022, I think.
I know. I'm pretty sure we just recorded the first episode like a month ago. Calm down. Like, what's happened? And weren't you just saying before you've still got your Perth – did you have some Perth clothes that are not packed, unpacked yet?
Oh, can we not talk about that, please?
So since 2016 – because, I mean, the move worked out well for everyone, including me, because you sold half your Perth wardrobe on Facebook, and I've got this really nice Zimmerman dress that I still wear to this day.
That beautiful red dress. The problem is the other half that I didn't sell came with me, and I still haven't unpacked it.
I think you should let me go through it and I'll just buy whatever fits me.
You can have it.
Yeah, go for it.
You can just have it.
20% off.
Honestly, I need that discount, because knowing what it is, Annabelle's, when I Googled like Zimmerman and realized, I was like, holy shit, what did I get this dress for? Anyway, I'm happy with that, guys. Hit up Annabelle on Instagram if you want a good dress.
I still haven't unpacked my Perth wardrobe. Anyway, I think that's a bit off track.
Buy a couple of horses with that.
Honestly, you could. You could get your podcast gear, Tom.
Oh, yeah.
That'd pay for a Wayflasher setup. So we're at the point where you're at Catherine Outback Experience and you guys are kicking along. We covered a bit of that in the first episode, but there's been since then, we've had babies, we've had COVID, we've had awards, we've had national awards, not just Tom. I mean, Tom wins lots of awards for his singing, but you guys as the business have won lots of awards as well. So I guess we last spoke in mid-2019. You were pregnant with Harry.
Oh, you've got a good memory. I was trying to work out if we were even married at that point. But, yes, I was. Well, that's right.
Oh, I don't know if you're married, but you were pregnant.
I was. I was very pregnant because we were sitting on the floor quite awkwardly. I remember this now.
Oh, honestly, you weren't pregnant then for the very first episode.
Oh, that was second episode. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. I don't – yeah, I can't.
No, I was thinking of the first and I just –
No, that was the second one. You're right.
When did you have the baby?
He
was born at the end of 2019.
We got married on the 6th of the 7th, 2018. I always remember this because it's 6, 7, 8. Don't ask me what year it is until I can work out that it's 6, 7, 8. 6th of the 7th, 2018. And then Harry was born November 2019.
Yep. So you would have been pregnant when we recorded the very first episode ever in June 2019. Oh, but maybe we recorded the second episode. Maybe he was already born. Remember. Who knows? Honestly, time. We're old.
Things have happened since.
I know. So, yep. So we've had a baby since that. So since that very first episode, we had a baby.
Had two.
Yes, two. We've gone on tour, won awards. Yeah, fill me in, the two of you.
You go, Bells.
So, yep, Harry was born in 2019 and we have little Lottie, the wild child. She's just turned one.
I've got to ask, where does the name Lottie come from? Because until yesterday, I thought it was like a nickname for Charlotte, like Charlotte, Lottie.
It is a nickname for Charlotte, but we, both of us just really liked it.
Where'd you find it from? It also feels very old school in a way, like Victorian era. I suppose it would be like classy.
With my name, Tom's name, we've grown up sort of with that older style, I think.
Yeah.
Perhaps influence, but I don't know. We just both really liked it. Did you find it from, though?
Yeah, no, it's pretty cool.
He's like, I've been living a lie every day for the last year.
One day, Steph, you will understand how hard it is to name children. It doesn't come that easy.
Oh, I just told my person, I was like, I let you name the puppy so that I get to name the first child.
Well,
there was strategy there.
He won. I can tell you that much. It was just a name that we both really, really loved. And I hope I didn't make a mistake in not calling her Charlotte, but I figured we're going to call her Lottie anyway. So why not just call her Lottie? Much like Harry, he's just Harry. We both just agreed that I don't know. We both liked it. And I don't know. Ask us in 20 years time.
How old was Harry when you went on tour?
Yeah, so he was 3 weeks old when we hit the road.
Can you just give us a breakdown of like what the tour involves, like how long you're away for, how many Ks you would have travelled, how many shows, roughly?
Yep. So that year, I think we were on the road for 4.5 months. Couldn't tell you, probably 50 shows on the road that year. We must have come up. I can't even remember how we got home, but we would have gone Queensland, New South, Victoria, and then I don't remember how we got home that year. We must have come back up through through South Australia.
We flew to the Territory for awards or something, the tourism awards.
I can't even remember.
With little Harry. Because didn't we go
to every state? No, you went to the awards. I didn't because he was a week old. Yeah. But by the time he was like 5 months old, he'd been to every state in Australia except for Tasmania. That's right. We went to, no, you're right. You're talking about the Australian Tourism Awards. We went to the ACT.
Yeah, right.
And then, yeah, in that period was when COVID started to unravel. And we were on the road and I remember we were heading to Molong, this gorgeous, gorgeous town in New South Wales, where my sister actually lives now, would you believe it? And we were heading there and I remember my brother-in-law being on the phone and telling me about this crazy thing going on in China and we're all laughing about it going, oh, the Chinese, that's just hilarious. That's never going to happen. And fast forward a few months and sure enough, we were all in this thing called lockdowns that we never, ever thought would happen here.
Where were you when the first lockdown hit you?
We got back to the Territory and flew straight down to Western Australia to see my folks. And it was all part of the plan. And, we were there for about 6 days and to see Tills and Charlie as well. And we got back into the Territory within a day and the borders shut.
That's lucky.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'd been, I think the day we landed in Western Australia, we were watching the news every day and just going, what does this mean for us? What is it going to mean for tourism? Our tourism season in the Territory is April to October. And I remember the lockdowns happened on the 22nd of March. So we'd just done 6 months with no tourism income. Fortunately, we hit the road over our low season and tour the Outback Show. So that sort of replenished so much of the business. But for the tourism industry in the territory, it was and Northern Australia, really, it was really, really tough. And it had already been a tough year nationally. We'd had the bushfires. I know there'd been floods. And then we were just gearing up. In March is usually when you spend a fair bit of money getting ready for the new tourist season. And then it was all taken away. And it's interesting now we're on the other side of it. And again, it feels like a bit of a faint memory. But when you were in it, it was pretty scary.
Is it just me or is it really weird how COVID just kind of dropped off the face of the earth though? Like, I feel like we were still getting like daily news bulletins about it, and like our premier in WA was putting up like daily stats on Facebook. And then I feel like at some point this year, like there wasn't like an official like black and white, like it's finished, but it's just kind of petered out. But it's still ongoing. Like, my brother got COVID last week and I was like, oh, like, there you go. Like, it's
is that a thing?
I forget. Yeah. Like, how do you?
Well, I suppose it's all part of the process.
How did you know for you when it was over for the business?
It's a good question. I don't think it is all over for us necessarily. It's, we've definitely relaxed more. It's still, I think for us, now our biggest concerns are around flooding, not in here in Katherine, but when we hit the road touring. It's interesting. It's funny. You're right. COVID's no longer a weekly discussion topic at all. It was, I guess, even this year when we came back, funnily enough, touch wood, do I dare say it? Tom and I haven't had it yet.
Neither have I. Yes, let's have a club.
But can we touch the wood or something? Because
I don't have anything nearby.
In declaring this, it's going to be our undoing.
Do these floorboards count? Are they real?
No, they're not.
They're floating?
I wish. Let's claim it. They look like wood. we haven't had it yet, but I guess in the business that we run, and which is – I don't even think we've talked about it in this podcast yet, but it's an outback show.
Oh yeah.
And
my bad.
For 6 months of the year, it's an outback show where tourists come to and visit us in Katherine. And then for the other 6 months, we hit the road and take the music and the outback show to the rest of Australia. And, so we've got tourism and music, and they were like the two big industries that were really crippled by national lockdowns, and even here in Katherine, it was local lockdowns. And I know Western Australia was similar. In fact, nationally it was. And for those early days, no one was allowed really in. Well, they put a border on us around about 200 kilometres, which in Sydney or Melbourne, that's huge, and even Perth. But in Katherine, you don't even get to the next town within 200 kilometres. So it was really, we had to change everything. We had to go from a very domestic market. Prior to COVID, we really relied majority on interstate travelers to come to us, to come and see our show. And we didn't have a big following locally. And it's just that classic thing. Like, as a local, you don't really do what's in your own backyard, but you'll go and travel to 10 hours away and you'll do everything possible in that town. And that's just what it is. That's just what it is. But we had to then change everything we did to target a very, very, very local Katherine market within about 30 kilometers of our home. And to this day, we're so grateful for the way that, our local community embraced our business and embraced what we were doing and really, I guess, helped us get through what was a really, really tough time. Not only for our business, obviously, but for everyone. And I remember a lot of people coming out to us to go horse riding from a mental health perspective. And they're just like, we just need to get out. We're climbing the walls. And at that point in time, we were allowed to do one-on-one rides as long as we could keep a meter away on another horse. And we made sure we ticked all the boxes. And we just had this huge amount of demand from people just being like, oh my goodness, I just need to get out of the house. I just need to do something that's good for the soul and good for the head. And that's where the horse riding really took off, for us during that period of time. It was super intensive. It was, I think I went back and looked at our stats and realized that I think during that period we worked every single day with people, in the year that we'd planned to actually take a bit of a back seat now that we were new parents. And both of us, it was madness, wasn't it? But you just, it's like I've said a few times already, it's a faint memory now. And you just do it. You do what you have to do to get to the next point or to get through it. And for us, it wasn't about making money when all of that happened. It was actually for us, it was about making sure we could feed our animals, put food on the table and keep our staff employed. Because we had this whole team of staff that had come with us from interstate that all of a sudden couldn't get home to their family. And we were like, I remember sitting there and just having to tell my staff, being like, I'm really sorry that I have to break promises to you, but I can promise you that whatever happens, you will have a roof over your head and we'll make sure you're fed whatever happens. But we don't know what's going to happen and we don't know what next week looks like. We don't know what 2 months look like. And it was really tough. But that story is like everyone's story. We weren't alone in it. And that's something we had to just keep reminding ourselves that it was tough little time.
What I can't quite believe is that for you, Tom, this is the second time something's happened where, like, more or less overnight your income's been taken away from you and you've been forced to, like, I mean, at least this time you had Annabelle, you know, and you were, like, to pivot, like, because that's the second life, export ban, and then COVID, like, twice. I don't know, are you feeling a little cursed?
Don't know. I think there's going to be a few more too down the track. Don't worry. But, yeah, I think, and that's what a lot of people I found have, a lot of mates, a lot of people all over the country have had to try to think outside the box and, you know, try to diversify and keep their heads above water, you know. There's a lot have gone under and, you know, I've even spoken to a bloke yesterday and how – he was in the tourism industry in WA and, yeah, he said he suffered greatly, you know, so he's still feeling those effects. But I just think, yeah, you've just got to, still got to try to be smart about it and plunge into anything, but you've got to really try to, that's it, keep having a crack and keep on going.
How does this affect you guys going forward with, I guess, a business and a life plan? Like the two or three. So you've got Tom's like music career, you've got Catherine Outback experience as a tourism operation, and then there's still some sort of horse training as well. All three of those things have shown how vulnerable they can be to outside influences. Like, I guess, how does that affect you going forward, thinking like, how are we going to survive whatever happens next? Do you need to have like another side hustle or?
I hope not.
Yeah, I'm going to write a book.
Yes.
He has been talking about that for a while. Oh, but not.
Bullshit. I just gave him the idea and I want.
Not about himself, though. Not about himself.
Not about me.
He's far too humble. Wouldn't do
That's
it.
All right. But, I'll write that book.
Yeah, you can have that book. It's funny. We used to always say, like, how could we go wrong? We had a tourism business, and if tourism fell over, we had the touring business. So, and then never in our lives did we think that both would be brought to a grinding halt at once. And I think it just went to show that it's really important never to put everything into one basket and all your eggs into one basket. And that's, I guess, we talk sort of about the sad side of COVID and how tough it was. But for us as a business, it was also a bit of an adventure. So we sort of just went effort, literally, and just went, let's do everything we always had wanted to do. Let's just do it. Let's just see what happens. Let's just road test it. Let's just have a bit of fun. Never have we been in such an opportunistic position to just try it. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't matter. And
what
we did
you try?
So I think we mentioned it before. Like we tried the horse riding, experiences and the lessons. We brought on the farm therapy stuff, which is something that our community had been asking for years and years. We road tested glamping. We road tested luxury swag experiences. It was such a cool opportunity for our team to get a grasp on what's involved and how much work was involved and what it means. And, we learned so much from that. Trying to think, what else did we do? We road tested these long table dinners, which have now become a permanent fixture with our tour groups that come through. We had plans of getting into the virtual space, but we just created too much work for ourselves that we never quite got there. But it was really cool. It gave us a lot of confidence to just give things a go. And so often you hear of people saying, oh, you know, I'd love to do this, or I'm just wanting to get my ducks in a line. And it's not worth waiting. Just do it. Just give it a go, because your ducks are never going to be in a line. We know that. We've learned that. And you talk, I guess the question that you posted, Tom, before about hitting two major, almost catastrophic business events, or crippling events, we don't really dwell on it. Dare we say it? We've come out the other side so much stronger. And to a degree, we're almost lucky that those things have happened, because it's given us a lot of confidence to just go, let's just do it. Let's just give it all we've got. Let's not worry about, things going wrong, because it's actually better that it goes wrong than we don't do it at all. And it's almost been, I guess we are very positive people. We're very optimistic people. And that's, I guess, geared us up even more for the future.
I'm not going to lie. The last couple of years are a complete blur, and I don't know what happened in what year, but you guys did win a national tourism award. When was that? And tell us about the award. It was like, during or after COVID, right?
Yeah. I sort of claim it to be a bit of a Stephen Bradbury moment.
Because I'm like, I don't know if it was 2020, 21, 22. So could have been 2016.
It was 2022.
Okay, so it was this year.
Which was pretty much the entire period of COVID. They didn't run the tourism awards for a year there. And
You could have told me that it happened in 2020, and I'd be like, oh, yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. So we won Best Tourist Attraction in Australia, which was a huge shock to us. We didn't think we had a chance in the world of winning that. We were up against some big tourist operations, the Bundi Rum Distillery and the Arboretum in Canberra, and oh, just some amazing, amazing experiences. And we really didn't think we had a hope in hell. And at that point in time, we were touring in Western Australia. And as you would know, Western Australia was still pretty locked up. So the idea of us going to the Gold Coast or Sunny Coast, I think it was, for the awards was just off the cards. We had 10 horses, 10 dogs, 2 babies on the road in Western Australia. The chance of not getting back was far greater risk than. So we, at that point in time, we were actually in Badgingarra, and we were doing a show in Badgie.
North of Perth.
About 3 hours north of Perth, tiny little awesome country town. One that I don't know. I think they said maybe 10, 15 years ago was the last time they had a live music event there. Such a cool community. And we're there. And we actually sent Tom's brothers to the awards, because they're in tourism now too, over in Cumbria with the Bunya Mountains. And I'm like, well, this is kind of cool. Why don't you guys go? And we were having this gorgeous night in Badgingarra, and sure enough, we were announced as the winners of the best attraction in Australia. So that night in Badgie turned out to be a pretty big and significant night for that gorgeous community.
Yeah, that was cool, because I was singing and on stage with the crew, and then Annabelle just comes up mid-song just shouting at me. I'm going, what? What's going on? Is there a fight or something? No, we just won. I said, won what, mate? We just won the tourist attraction. I said, oh, my God. So, yeah, the whole of both people in the crowd went off.
The whole three? No, joking. No.
that was an awesome community that night. That was an
awesome community. Yeah.
So it was pretty specky, wasn't it? We couldn't believe it.
So Badgingarra.
Sorry, you go.
I was going to say Badgingarra will forever go down in history.
Yeah. And my two brothers, I said, because we shouted them tickets, so they were getting free beer. And then they asked me if they had to do a speech. I said, no, don't worry about it, mate, because we've got Buckley's of winning, so just hook into the beer, you'll be fine. And then we got called out, and the brother that was supposed to go up for the speech had too many beers. And so the other one had to get relegated up there, and so he wasn't slurring so much, but he did the speech and
did
a good job.
He did an awesome job.
That is brilliant. It's quite a feather to have in your cap. What's next for Catherine Outback Experience now that you guys, I mean, you kind of already hit the big time, but just keep going from strength to strength.
Well, it's probably more for Tommy, but we are, one would have thought maybe having a little break, but no.
Yeah, we need to have a discussion about.
I was keen to go on honeymoon. We haven't had any honeymoon.
You know,
yet.
Honeymoon would have been good.
I was keen to do that,
holiday.
But apparently she just wants to keep working.
So there is a new single out soon. There's a new album out soon in the coming weeks.
I'm going to drop this tomorrow, so it's okay.
Okay, so we can talk
dates.
When
does this go?
Tomorrow.
Does it really?
Yeah, if that's okay.
Yeah.
So I've never done one in such short time, but you know, give the people something
here
live.
Here we go. 7th of October 2022 is the next single, which is actually
this weekend?
A bit of our story.
A Friday.
It's a Friday, correct. Ooh. It's when music drops.
Is that this Friday?
FYI. Yeah.
We haven't told anyone
yet. Is it this Friday?
Yeah.
Oh, see how far behind we are? I didn't realize it was this Friday. Yep.
It's so, Heaven on
so,
Earth.
So this Friday, guys, we have Tom Curtin has a new single dropping called Heaven on Earth.
What's
Check
it about?
Out.
Chocolate?
Do the sell.
It really should be coming from you.
No, you go.
So apparently it's our story, a bit of our story.
It sounds like if I hear the words heaven on earth, I feel like you're talking about the first time you sat down and recorded a podcast with me. Are you sure it's not about our
was
story?
It, was it the second it time and the problem. Third time as well?
Yeah, that too.
Heaven on earth, yeah. Anyway, check it out. It's a cracker. But new album out on the 21st of October, which also happens to be a Friday, Steph, just FYI. And yeah. Then we are
and Catherine, a big
we're
launch.
Doing our album launch. I'm talking as if it's mine. Because I'm so
no, you
invested.
Guys are a team, please.
We are a team.
Okay.
So big album launch in Catherine, Northern Territory on the 21st of October, 2022, just in case you're listening to this in 2023 or 4 or 5, followed by Darwin the following night and then hitting the road.
Straight on the
Six
road
months.
After that.
Charters 6 months towns. On the road.
Oh, we're going East Coast this time.
Charters, Townsville, Ingham, Cairns, Greenvale, Bowen.
And then
Armidale, Tamworth, Country Music
So you're going down to New South, you hit it all the way to Victoria?
Yeah, we're going
Tasmania.
Dubbo.
No.
Boom.
All the way to Bairnsdale. Just some music in Tassie.
At this point in time.
2 weeks over and there. That's our little honeymoon. We get to do.
I don't think it's a honeymoon. It
six
count.
Gigs.
Doesn't count.
Over there, just concerts.
No, I wouldn't
animals.
Be accepting that as a honeymoon.
That's a bit of a honeymoon.
2 weeks with two children, three and under.
I would be going back to Perth and dropping them with mum and dad and then getting on a plane
that
for 2 weeks.
That is a great idea.
You're an ideas person.
I
we could
am.
Do that.
I like what
your parents would
I
love.
I like
that.
What you're putting down here. They would, actually.
Yeah. Done.
Guys, we've heard it on the podcast. It's basically locked in stone.
And then after Tasmania, back up through South Australia and home to Catherine in mid to late April-ish.
So I probably won't see you after tonight until April.
Unless you come to our launch.
I know. Well, we realised this the other day I'm in Darwin on both those nights.
Oh, you come
That's
to the
right.
second one.
She's going but to the symphony.
I got tickets to the symphony orchestra.
She really? He's doing the symphony. Over
I think you should come up and sing on stage with the Darwin Symphony Orchestra. I saw them a few weeks ago. They were really good.
You've already seen them.
I know.
So why
are you going back again?
Yeah.
Over Tom Curtin.
Jesus.
Well, Tom didn't even remember me, so whatever. What was it? The topic at the beginning you didn't remember. Oh, you didn't even remember last time I came on tour.
What shows were you at?
New to Gate.
Yeah. And there was one in the where the uranium
Esperance.
Mine was going to be, or lithium mine. And we stayed at some person's house.
Yeah.
And they're talking about mining lithium.
Jeffro.
This is like, how many years ago is this?
5 years ago.
Oh, was only it? 5 years
ago? No, it'd be 2019, I reckon.
No.
No, because
we did East Coast in 2019.
Yeah, we've done two tours in WA.
2017, 18.
Another one East Coast.
No, I was overseas in 2017.
The summer of 2017, 18?
Yeah.
That's when we did that tour.
No, because I hadn't met. Oh, I don't know.
You're lying.
I only got back. Oh, I got back at Christmas time, maybe.
We haven't done many shows since then.
It was in the new year.
Yeah, it was.
Trust me, I know. I know my dates.
She's a freak with dates.
Yeah. Except I remember because one of the horses got sick for a minute.
Correct. That's the only reason I remember it.
I had to carry those 44-gallon drums that the dogs jump up on down the world's steepest horse ramp.
Is that a new gate?
Yes.
I do remember.
Thank you.
Nose tubing.
She stayed up all night.
A horse there for colic.
Yeah. But I just remember being terrified to carry the drums out of the horse truck down to the ground because it was like a steep cliff, like world's steepest ramp. And I'm holding this big 44-gallon drum. Just waiting to die.
I didn't realize. And
then we had to bring.
There,
then so. We had to bring portable
so anyone
paddles
wants
down.
To sponsor a less better, steep ramp,
yeah,
or a new truck,
horse truck,
yeah.
Get on board.
If anybody's listening and they're considering going on tour with Tom, don't do it.
I won't remember you.
Right? Yeah.
Yes, we will. We love our stuff. What are you talking about?
Oh, I need to. Okay,
bad. I remember the horse. I didn't remember you.
I don't have. The name, which is really bad, but so my mum's a school teacher in Perth and there's a girl that works with her that is Tom Curtin obsessed. My mum always tells me about it. I don't know her name, but maybe you could just do a generic shout out to the girl who works at the school with my mum. No, like my mum's always like, have you spoken to Tom? And then whatever, you've got a fan.
So what's
down
your mum's name?
Rochelle.
Rochelle. Hi, Rochelle. This is a big shout out to the girl that works for you.
Yeah.
Not sure if it's your tennis partner.
No, they're school teachers.
Oh, the school teachers. Okay. So the school teachers.
My
a big shout out
at
to Rochelle's Tom Curtin fan.
Yeah. Legend. I'll find a name and.
Yeah. We'll find a name later. Yeah. But you know who we're talking to.
Yeah, she does. Hopefully.
Have a good one out there.
Yeah. Oh, we just need to get you on tour as the Luke Combs support or something.
Did we mention that you could pre-order the album? Since we were talking.
Can you still get CDs? Is that a thing?
Yeah, CDs are really cool, guys. Really cool.
Vintage.
They'll be arriving soon.
Low-rise jeans are coming back into fashion. Let's all be.
Oh, that, I heard. Some things, I nearly cried.
Some things should not come back into fashion. But,
why are they
but
doing
CDs,
that to us?
Yes. Yeah.
CDs are okay, but low-rise jeans, please no.
Yeah,
I heard this and I really hoped it was a bad.
I've got a great TikTok to show you about that. So
did they not learn anything from the early 2000s?
No.
Muffin tops.
Two
Eat
words.
Your heart out.
Paris Hilton.
She and Nikki.
Yeah. So we'll finish on a happier note than low-rise jeans because we're all going to be scarred after that now. So we're going on tour down the East Coast. You got some more. Does that mean will you be in Tamworth around the awards times then?
Correct. Country Music Festival.
Yeah. Cool. Are you playing at the Country Music Festival? Do we know? Have they lined
yes.
it up yet?
Yeah, we've got a couple of gigs down there. We're doing just out of Tamworth.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing because we used to do it at the
Paceway
Undercover Arena at the old showgrounds, but they're pulling that big shed down. So we've been searching and searching. So we're just going to be about 15 minutes out of Tamworth at Undercover Arena on a mate's place. So yeah, we'll go there and it'll be all if you go to my website, tomcurtin.com.au, you'll be able to see all the gigs, the places, the venues, the times. And check that out. Should be a lot of fun, really.
So this is a bit of a different podcast than some of the other ones I do, but I do usually always finish with the same question, which I haven't given you guys a heads up about, but, you know, YOLO. I usually ask, looking back at your story so far, what would you say is the major takeaway lesson? And I feel like that is important for me to ask in this episode because you've spoken about so many experiences where you have learnt things And like the name of your last album, We're Still Here, like you guys are still here, which is ironically, you wrote that before COVID.
Correct.
Yeah. You wrote an album before COVID called We're Still Here. COVID has been and gone, and you're still here. So
let's just say some COVID did good things for that album.
That is some good, what do they call it, forecasting, or when you put things out in the universe, like a when you affirmations.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what's the lesson? Look at us, it's also late, we're also tired. I can't speak straight.
What's the lesson, Belzy?
I knew you were going to do that.
Okay, no, got it first. Don't worry. One each. If you go.
For us, it's been just give it a crack. Just have a go. It doesn't matter if it doesn't work out. At least you gave it a go. At least that's something you can cross off the list if it didn't work out. Or on the flip side, if it did work out, that's pretty cool. Yours, Tommy.
I think, yeah, I do like that. And also, I think you've got to look back, like you say, and just be grateful, feel the gratitude because of how far we've come, you know, singing to one or two people down there. We sing to four or five now, so it's
we've, look, that's like a 200% increase.
You know? But, you know, it has – honestly, and a lot of people, like these days, a lot of keyboard warriors out there, there's a lot of people that will try to take you down, a lot of negativity out there in this world. And, you know, I just, you know, we've copped a bit over the years just for different things. And a lot of people do these days. And I just think, yeah, you've just got to keep on the same track that you've, keep your vision there, keep looking up at that sign that, you know, that you can see is your goal, because you'll get a lot of people that will try to take you off that track. And, you know, you got to really follow your gut and keep looking at your vision, keep working and striving at it, have short and long-term goals, and just be grateful of, you know, the bad things that's happened in your life, the negative stuff, but also what you've learned out of that to take on board to keep forging ahead, because it'll all add to your character and your self-esteem, and yeah, the journey will be so much more worthwhile.
And I think on that one, Tom, surround yourself with good people.
Yeah.
Great people. We are so lucky. And that's, I guess, now that the opportunity's arisen, we wouldn't be where we are today if it wasn't for some of the amazing people around us. And they know who they are.
I mean, there's only one of them in the room right now, but yeah.
Yeah, Tom, you
I miss you. But and it's not necessarily, it's not wealthy people or anything like that.
It's just great people.
It's just people that want to spend time with you, want to check in with you. We got a lot of mates that and we do the same, check in, ring people, just check in with people and see how they're going, but just want to hang out and have fun, and
people who build you up.
Yeah.
People who back
you want to hang around those people, and the people that you'll find out, the people that want to bring you down or rubbish you in front of their friends and things like that, just cut them. You know, it's like if you look at a mob of horses and there'll be a horse in there that's a dominant horse, it's just real snake. He keeps trying to bite the other horses and kick and chase. If you take that mob one out of the mob,
everyone's happy.
Yeah, the mob settles down. So same, I believe, with people. So, you know, just look out for each other, check in with your mates, and, yeah, just be grateful for what you've already gotten, what you've already achieved.